Megan, Anna, and I are so excited to have a repeat sponsor who's supporting the Divergent Conversations podcast. Landmark College is the world's first accredited college designed exclusively for students who learn differently. Landmark, located in Putney, Vermont, which is one of my favorite states, offers courses in person and online, awarding associate and bachelor's degrees, and offering pre-college, gap year, and professional development programs for educators who work with neurodivergent students. With a student-to-faculty ratio of just 7-1, and the renowned Landmark College Institute for Research and Training, Landmark offers personalized and research-informed support for neurodivergent students that is not available at traditional colleges. Still enrolling for fall 2025. Learn more about this opportunity at landmark.edu. That's landmark.edu. Hey, everyone. You are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening. All right, everyone. Welcome back to Divergent Conversations. This is our season finale for our autistic burnout hell city.
We never properly named. And also, I don't even know if it is autistic burnout specific or just burnout.
Right. Yeah.
I can't remember how we set up the framing for this.
Episode one feels so long ago.
Even though it was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Same, you know, time. Yeah. So today, what are we talking about?
Today, we're talking about, because we've been kind of loosely following the structure of the Autistic Burnout Workbook. And so the final chapter in that, which I feel like is an important part of the conversations, is things like setting up accommodations, self-advocacy, boundaries, because that is often a huge part of building a life more resilient to burnout is, first of all, like identifying our needs, but then taking our needs seriously, which is actually hard for a lot of us. And then either seeking out formal accommodations or building our own accommodations. And then all of that requires a bit of self-advocacy and often some boundary setting, which again is hard for a lot of us, especially if we've adapted to some of our social like alienation or isolation by becoming people pleasers. So on one hand, this is kind of a like, it can be a pragmatic conversation around like, how do you pursue accommodations? How do you set boundaries? But it's also a deeply psychological one around what comes up for us when we are, first of all, taking our needs seriously, let alone advocating for them or setting boundaries with people.
Yeah, it's a very nuanced conversation for sure. And yeah, like you mentioned, not an easy one typically. If we're thinking about it more pragmatically, we're kind of following some of the stuff that you've created in your workbook. What are some of more of the pragmatic steps that people can take to start down this journey or this path?
So first with the accommodations piece, and that's going to depend on a person's location, like country. But first, if there are accommodations available for you, seeing what it takes to pursue those. There are a few resources that I like for inspiration for this. So like JAN, which is Job Accommodations Network, they have some really great sort of databases where these are ideas of some of the accommodations that employers should provide based on the disability. And while it is specific to the US, I think it's just great for ideas in general. Like I like to look through it just to see like what are some perhaps ideas of accommodations I haven't thought about, you know, even building into my own life. So sure, there's resources like that. There's, you know, if we're in education system, typically we will have access to resources. There's a process to getting those different accommodations. So there's the formal accommodation route. And yeah, this resources like Jan, I think, are really helpful for just even seeing what's available to you. And then I think what most of us do, and actually this has been, we see this in workplace studies as well, where the majority of people with invisible disabilities, and this is kind of a sad finding, but found that it was just not really worth it to go through the formal channels, and that most of them were building the accommodations themselves. So unfortunately, right. that is the position most people are in, where it's what self-accommodations can I build in or can I advocate for? So that could be things like, you know, if someone is in a traditional workplace that has more professional attire, can they advocate for like, hey, can I wear a hat with a rim because it helps, you know, the glare of the overhead lights, it helps reduce that, or asking for different sensory accommodations, which then gets right into the self-disclosure. What do we feel comfortable self-disclosing? Something I talk about a lot is reminding people it doesn't have to be a full self-disclosure. It can be a partial one. So for example, if you're asking for sensory accommodations, either at work or even in friendships or acquaintances, you can say like, hey, I've got some sensory sensitivities. Is it okay if we move this conversation over here? Or is it okay if, you know, I wear a rimmed hat because it helps with my sensory sensitivities? And I think if we're not sure if it's safe to disclose, that's where it's really helpful to kind of test the waters with some of those partial self-disclosures. And it's just, it protects our privacy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've talked about before being really kind of like confident and sure in your self-disclosure process, just because it can be met with negative feedback or reaction. And there is risk inherently associated with self-disclosure. So being really mindful about when and where and who you are disclosing to, when that you feel comfortable and safe and supported, because, you know, it's obviously a very painful experience to not only have your existence or identity minimized or dismissed, but can also be a dangerous one as well in some instances as well.
Well, and I think we're all kind of thinking about that. It's forefront of our minds a bit more because of the attempts at making a registry. And so, yeah, I think it's interesting, even how I talk about these things shifts from like, I used to be so pro like self-disclosure and visibility. And now it's like, people are getting nervous about that. And like, understandably needing to think about some of this stuff differently.
For sure.
So again, that's where partial self-disclosure, especially in this context we're in, can be a really nice alternative. And that's, so in general, I think when thinking about building in accommodations, there's almost like a drill down equation of like, okay, what is the unmet need here? And then if you are needing to involve another human, which we often are, it's, can I pair the disclosure to the unmet need? And I don't have to say more than that. So maybe it's my body really struggles to regulate temperature. Is it okay if we keep our thermostat at this point? So pairing the disclosure specifically with the need that you're asking to be addressed.
Yeah, not having to dive in headfirst, so to speak, and say, hey, by the way, everyone in the office, I'm autistic. Mm-hmm. And that may not be a place that feels safe enough to do so. And there can definitely be discrimination that comes up if you do self-disclose, even in the safest of environments. So I think what you're saying makes so much sense, to pair the need with the accommodation and then the disclosure that comes with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then with the boundary stuff, I guess from the pragmatic part, that's like thinking through, there's different kinds of boundaries, right? So we can have body boundaries, we can have emotional boundaries, we can have financial boundaries, we can have like content, like topics that are like, you know, topical boundaries, I guess would be the way of saying that. And then this is where I really like script banks. And this is something I've leaned on the Nook a lot for, of like, we've gathered some, I'll often ask like, what are some of your favorite scripts for different scenarios? And then we've gathered some of those. I actually have a database, so we'll link that here. We have a database that we've put together of different boundary scripts. And some of my favorite ones are around capacity. Like, I wish I could, but I don't have capacity for that right now. So I'm someone who needs boundary scripts. Otherwise, I'm going to go off explaining all of the context and explaining more than I probably feel comfortable sharing or more than I need to share for asking for what I'm asking for. So I really like boundary scripts with boundaries. How are boundaries for you? Like, what's your relationship to boundaries, making them, holding them?
I like
talking about them.
Question.
I'm assuming not great.
No, they've gotten better. I think
well done.
Yeah, I think they've gotten better. Like, I think prior, or pre-discovery, not great at all. Definitely like stereotypical people pleaser. Some of that is intertwined with like attachment stuff. And then post-discovery, I've learned more and more about the boundaries that I will set and create with friend groups, with professional relationships. I have boundaries with my technology, like putting my phone in a different room starting at 5 p.m. most days. Being able to just say no to things that I definitely would have said yes to and felt an enormous amount of guilt and shame around, or exerted an enormous amount of energy around. Really zooming out again, going back to our last episode, like zooming out and saying like, I keep thinking of this phrase, is the juice worth the squeeze? And really thinking about that, like, because acknowledging that my capacity and energy are often so low and so diminished that I really need to be very strategic. And I've even done this in my career, you know, like post second throat surgery, noticing capacity is diminished, eliminating portions of my professional career and identity that were bringing in large sums of revenue that I was not able to do anymore. Hard at first, for sure. So glad that they are in place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And that's where, I mean, you talk about like self-doubt and self-worth a lot. And that's where I could imagine setting up those boundaries, especially when you were taking away income streams and things that, yeah. I mean, our identities and our careers are often also very interconnected. So I imagine that when you were making those boundaries, there was also, that was tapping into some of that attachment stuff, as well as self-worth, imposter sure. syndrome. Yeah.
And I like you, used to give away a lot of my information from people who are asking for it, mm-hmm. and spend a lot of time and energy on those conversations, realizing how depleting they were. And mm-hmm. instead now just like having links to resources, or just simply saying, I don't have the capacity to answer that question, has been really life-changing for me.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
What about you?
And that's, well, I'll answer that. I want to, the idea of like actually honoring our capacity. Mm-hmm. That's something that has come up a lot in conversations with clinicians in the NUC.
I would say that the way we're batch recording and doing this podcast now are a consequence of boundaries that you set from your acknowledging and honoring your capacity.
Yeah, that's right. And that was a hard conversation. And we talked about that last season. Yeah. Like we did bump into our stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we worked through it.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that is a good part of it. It's like when we ask for boundaries, we're like, that's our stuff, but like we also could be activating the other person's stuff. Cause that could, a boundary can feel like a rejection when we're placing it. And I think a healthy boundary, and actually, so I have a mixed relationship to this word boundary, because I think sometimes in like pop psychology, the way boundaries gets used, or when it gets used and there's kind of unhealthy dynamics at play, it's almost punishing, or it's like, well, yeah. I'm putting a boundary here, and like it's more of the like you're in or you're out, or yeah. I'm going to avoid this hard conversation because I'm putting a boundary up. Right. Versus I think of like really healthy, fruitful boundaries as this is the container that we live in where we get to relate to one another in a really healthy way.
Yeah.
And so the boundary is actually protective of the relationship. It is not a who's in, who's out. It is, this is the distance from which we can relate to one another in the most healthy, life-giving way for both of us.
Yeah.
And so that kind of boundary I get really excited about. I think there's other language we can use, like container or framework, that feel a little bit richer than boundary.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we needed to renegotiate the boundary of our podcast, or the framework mm-hmm. of it, because it wasn't really working for me.
Yeah. Yep. And I think when we think about the word boundary, there's often rigidity associated with it. Mm-hmm. Like it's this black and white thing. And I think there can be a lot of nuance to it as well. just kind of speaking more to like your pop psychology reference, where it's almost like fashionable or trendy to be like, I'm just cutting you off out of my life. And it's like, that's certainly useful at times, but sometimes we probably require some nuance and conversation about why the boundary is going up or being in, put into place.
And is it coming from a like reflective, responsive place or a reactionary space? I think also really makes a difference. And that's not to say that going low contact or no contact is not ever beneficial. I think there's certainly times where that is the boundary and the container that needs to exist.
100%.
And yeah, what energy are we putting that from?
And I think for those of you listening who are like maybe struggling with this concept, especially those of you who find yourself more in people-pleasing roles because of necessity or because it was how you survived or adapted, it's really interesting once you start putting boundaries into place, because you're probably going to get reactions from people in your life who are so used to you accommodating them or saying yes to them or just genuinely being more open to certain things, where it can create conflict.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially if it's a new pattern, because we get really used to dynamics and patterns in our relationships. So whenever someone is either like differentiating, like if they're coming from a more like enmeshed place with someone and they're differentiating, like where they get to be a self outside of that relationship, or if they're asserting new boundaries, what tends to happen, just because systems like homeostasis, so that's things staying the same, what tends to happen is there's going to be pressure to go back to the old way. And so that could look, I mean, that can look like kind of protests. It could, and that could show up in a lot of different ways. But the initial creating of a new boundary in an existing dynamic is really hard, because there tends to be a lot of pressure and pushback to go back to homeostasis, to go back to the old way of relating to one another.
Yeah, absolutely. And this can show up for you in professional settings. If you're typically the person in the office who's taking on extra work all the time because you feel like that's how your value is shown, or you want to show that you are capable of doing it, and you end up in burnout. And then all of a sudden you're like, I need to put some boundaries in place. I need to set some limits. That can be met with frustration and resistance. And I think it's important to just try to acknowledge how to have these conversations. And that's why I really love the idea of a script bank, because it takes away some of the emotional charge that can be connected to some of these conversations, and also allow you to not spend as much mental energy and anguish on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because these like sentences or ways of wording it, it's hard for a lot of our brains to like think through, how do I want to say this? And how do I want to say this in a way that honors the other person and also honors, you know, my capacity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So boundaries, accommodations.
And self-advocacy.
That piece. You know, it's so fascinating. We do these recordings and then always in the second one, I'm like, where's my brain at? Self-advocacy piece. And I think this is such an important just collection of topics right here. And I really like the way that you structure everything in your workbook, because it makes things really tangible and easily digestible. I think that's really important when it comes to some of these concepts that can be elicit some emotional response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where I it took me a while to get to this point, but where I try to kind of always have like 2 feet on 2 pedals, that's a weird metaphor, of like pragmatic. Like there's pragmatic things, but then like also have an eye on the deeper psychological work that's connected to the pragmatic thing. Cause it's whenever we're making any of these changes, there's typically both of those at play. And we can be working on the pragmatic piece, and then that's going to awaken some of the psychological stuff. And it's like, okay, I see you, I'll work with you, but it can, they can work together well when we understand that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Very intertwined and interrelated.
We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you're always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at signup for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account.
Do we have enough mental capacity at the moment to think metaphorically about how does any of this stuff fit into our metaphorical city?
So in burnout hell, there's just like people coming up to us all the time with ridiculous requests. Like, can you help me move this weekend? That is my least favorite request.
And one that I used to say yes to all the time.
I would say yes. And okay, this sounds really privileged. And it is privileged. I'd also in my head be saying like, you know, you can hire people for that. Hire the damn movers.
And try to like find an excuse as to why I didn't have to show up that day once the day finally got there. Like fake an illness or an injury or something like that.
Because this is a dynamic that was present in my family. Like siblings would do the like ask for help. But and to be fair, like they would be in a position to hire movers. Yeah. And then Luke and I always do the like hire movers because we're both very hyper independent. And so that request specifically. But I also realize like that's a beautiful thing when people are in interdependent communities and then you don't have to pay for it. But also like more bodies and moving and that's a sidetrack.
So people would be coming up to you, you'd be just like on your way, minding your own business. All of a sudden, you'd be approached by 5 to 6 different human beings and entities and question.
Yeah. So you'd be like helping neighbors move houses every single day unless you got really good at boundaries. Your body would be very sore.
Really?
They'd be asking things like that they could easily Google. But they'd be like, and they'd tap you on the shoulder. They'd be like, excuse me, I have a question. And then they ask you something that's like so Googleable. But you're getting that all the time.
That is actually like, not only is that my life, it is my idea of hell. Like, if y'all saw the behind the scenes of the email requests that I get sometimes or the DM requests where I am like, and I want to be petty and send back like a GIF, right? Of like, it's worth a Google or something like that. And that becomes a situation boundary related where it's like, do I answer this very simplistic question to just clear it off the board? Or do I set a boundary so that this does not become an expectation in this dynamic? Challenge.
That'd be kind of sassy, but it'd be interesting if in some like auto email responders, it was almost like a reflection back of like, can you answer this by Google? Or can you answer this by, But no, I think that's a little bit too sassy. And also, that's part of the autistic experience, right? Is not, you don't always know what's appropriate to ask or not. And so.
For sure. 100%.
Yeah.
So that would be a part of it. And it would be nonstop. Like this
it'd
is
be
like,
nonstop. Yeah.
Just ping, ping, ping. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it'd be people tapping you on the shoulder, excuse me. And you have a device in your phone that you're not allowed to put down. That is also the notifications are just coming in with the similar requests. So you're actually getting them in two different like cognitive mediums because you're getting them auditory and you're visually seeing different notifications coming in.
You are actually creating hell for me. Yeah.
This is hell for me too. This would be my nightmare.
I've talked about this on here, but part of my OCD is like, I have to clear notifications. I can't have them on my phone, but I do feel this urge that I have to respond because of read receipts. Like if people can see that you have read their messages, I am always,
you know,
just
you
like,
can turn that off, right?
On all platforms.
I don't know about all platforms, but on like, so like on WhatsApp, you could turn it off on Messenger. You're stuck in Android. I don't understand Androids. I don't know what's available to you there.
Yeah, it's just hell. I just want to name that. Okay, so that's happening. You're getting both of those types of alerts and communication. What else is happening when it's like, oh, you're like, you on a daily basis have to go up on stage in front of everybody and announce to the world that you're autistic, and everyone in the audience just tells you that you're not for one reason or another.
Oh my gosh. Or it's like a focus group where you're sitting in the hot seat and like right. people are just going around telling you all the reasons you're not autistic.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah. you have to like try to defend why you are.
You have to air your dirty laundry, like your most painful traumatic moments, to prove your autism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. That's on there. Yep.
And your ADHD. So I'd have to like show photos of my moldy coffee mugs. To prove my how gross I am to prove my ADHD. Gosh.
There's so many like good social media content pieces you could make. A day in the life of neurodivergent insights, and then like
you know, I've gotten over my shame when I make that.
Yeah, if that ever shows up publicly, I'm gonna be like cheering. Yeah. Okay, so that's happening. I mean, this sounds horrible.
We've done boundaries.
A medical provider or a mental health provider, and you're also having similar conversations, but all of your needs are just getting dismissed constantly. Mm-hmm. You just have anxiety and you just need to do meditation and mindfulness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the prescription.
And you need to get off TikTok and stop learning about autism. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think we must have talked about accommodations in one of our early episodes, because we talked about in this city, the line to get accommodations would be really, really long. And in the other city, you've got these like quiet little nests. So we must have touched on accommodations.
I think we touched upon it when we were like first imagining this hellscape. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is getting really stressful. So let's flip it. What is a monotropic manner? How do people relate in regards to boundaries with one another? There's like a lot of consent language. Like, do you have capacity? I actually appreciate this about you, Patrick. If you have something kind of hard you want to share, you will ask me like, do you have capacity to hear me? I don't know if you'll say the word vent, but like to hear me like talk about a hard thing. Mm-hmm. And then I pretty much always say yes. And I noticed how much I appreciate that. Like my nervous system appreciates it. Cause I'm also like, okay, I'm going to intake some negative emotion and I'm so much more resourced and prepared to take in whatever you're about to share because you've asked for that consent.
Thanks. So that would be a thing. That would just be standard across the board. People would just ask, do you have the capacity at the moment? And it would just be a known thing that if you said no, there would be no reaction. There would be no negativity towards that reaction. It would just be neutrality. It would actually be positivity. Like, good for you for setting that boundary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there'd be a lot of positive reinforcement of boundary setting. So like you'd feel like a little dopamine
and
endorphin boost when you do that. Cause it's like, oh, I did the norm that is the norm in the city.
Yep. So we would have consent language, especially around capacity and demand and responsiveness for sure.
There'd be robots to move, so no one ever asked help for moving because the robots do it.
This is really something that you have an experience with. I'm like, yeah, okay. So that there would be, I mean, we already have the answers at the touch of our fingertips, but people would not ask questions that could be easily Googleable, like what is the weather in Edinburgh, Scotland in July? You know, comes to forefront of my mind for some reason. So that would just be, you would just have that knowledge at all times. You would never have to ask anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think we would have like maybe very sensory specific quadrants of this monotropic manner where, you know, if you needed certain sensory input or you needed less sensory input, you would have specific areas where you could get more or less of that at any time. Maybe these were color coded too.
They would definitely be color coded.
Yeah. So you have those.
So there's the environments, like it's easier. You can just kind of move more flexibly to an environment that matches your need.
Exactly. And so, you wouldn't have to ever need it.
Yeah. Because right now what a lot of us do, like I think about when I go in public, it's like, okay, the hat, the sunglasses, the noise canceling headphones. It's like we're accommodating our bodies to fit into environments that don't match. Yep. But in a monotropic manner, we're able to flexibly move into environments that match us a bit more. So it's less of like, let me bubble up my body, and more about let me go find the environment that matches my body's needs right now.
Yeah. It would feel like very free and fluid, mm-hmm. opposed to like all of the mental and physical preparation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How do we create this thing and exist in it?
I mean, I think it feels a little parts of it feel a little sci-fi. So maybe after we write this book, we co-write a book together that's like sci-fi in a monotropic manner.
I mean, it sounds wonderful.
Sounds so lovely.
Rebook that again right now. What else would be there? We've talked so much about the sensory piece. I'm trying to think of like, since this is our final episode of this season, like doing all the check boxes in my brain of like, what have we talked about and included in this?
I feel like, I just had an image pop in my head of that there'd be like a really beautiful nature area. Because when we were talking about moving between environments, and we haven't talked about nature much, but I think nature is something that is really, I think it's soothing for all nervous systems, but I feel like for autistic systems specifically that are like hypersensitive, it's really replenishing. Like I think of being out in nature as that feels like the kind of ideal sensory detox. And so I feel like there'd be access to a lot of nature, a lot of water. Like I find sitting next to bodies of water so soothing. So that would be a part of this city that we haven't mentioned yet.
Mm. Nature, wildlife, no snakes. There'll be no snakes. I never have to look down at my feet to wonder if I'm going to step on one. There would be shady spots. There would be sunny spots. It would just be your preference. You could be sitting next to each other like we are right now, and you could tell by our offices how different the lighting is, although it's very dark here and storming.
Well, and I actually think we'd have these little bubbles that like bubble around us, and we get to control the lighting and the temperature. So for example, we could be sitting next to each other and it's like an invisible bubble. So it's just like, it kind of dims it or not. So it's not like, it doesn't feel confining, but in this bubble, we have complete control over our temperature and our like how dim or light it is. So yeah, cause you and I have very different needs. So if we were sitting together, one of us would typically be dysregulated unless we had our bubbles on.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds wonderful. I would say that go ahead. If you've listened to this entire season, to just be like making notes, whether mental or actually like, you know, handwritten or digital notes about the things that you need more of and want more of, and the things you need less and want less of in terms of how to support your system through burnout. Because a lot of what we've touched upon, you know, I know this is like sci-fi perfect existence, right? Which we know, unfortunately, is not realistic, but there are components that we can build in and implement and access more of. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to really focus on that stuff.
It makes me think about the importance or the role of fantasy.
Yeah.
Like and we've talked about this on other podcasts, how I think both of us escape to fantasy a lot. And that's something I actually used to feel a lot of guilt on until I started thinking about fantasy differently of like, what am I psychologically trying to work out here? What am I tapping into? Like what of my unconscious desires am I tapping into? And then I started like metabolizing my fantasies differently. And I'm actually sitting here getting curious. What was it about this topic that made you and I need to or want to build a fantasy world to be able to talk about it? Like, did it help us metabolize something that was hard? Like, Yeah. Do you have any thoughts about that? Of why did this metaphorical fantasy that we've co-created, why do you think we did that? What do you think was the function of that for us?
I've talked so much in general about like how fantasy for me is true escapism. Mm-hmm. And that's why I've loved like worlds like Lord of the Rings and Tolkien's worlds and even Game of Thrones, like places where I know like the weird, eccentric, quirky characters are just a part of the world and there's no differentiation and the existence seems like so easy. And I think that's where my brain goes when I think about wanting comfort and wanting regulation and wanting acceptance is to escape into fantasy, because the alternative, unfortunately, for a lot of us is really not that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm also thinking, and I hadn't made this connection until just now, but we've talked, like, we took a pause and then we talked about this last season, how it's been really hard for us to both sort out how to show up in the cultural moment we're in and the political context we're in.
Yeah.
That I also wonder if creating this alternative reality was kind of a response to that, potentially.
Sure it is. The cultural zeitgeist at the moment, you know, it's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just a dissociation away from that and just imagining this like perfect world, but really being able to articulate what it's like to live in the other mm-hmm. side of it is so important to highlight too, because, you know, you talk a lot about like catastrophic thinking. And when I think when we're in burnout, catastrophic thinking, you know, depression, increased anxiety, increased hypervigilance, like all go hand in hand. And it's so easy to get stuck in it. Like, this is my forever.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's part of it is, and we talked about this last time, and I talk about this all the time, how play and humor helps hold the heavy. Mm-hmm. Maybe we needed to make it funny. And by exaggerating it and making it funny through Burnout City.
Yeah.
Like, because otherwise it would be really, really sad and disempowering to list through all of the things that we navigate as autistic humans and ADHD yeah. humans in this world, and could feel really disempowering. And so mm-hmm. there's something also about bringing in some humor and playfulness that maybe helped us hold some of that heavy.
I agree 100%. I was actually texting a friend before we jumped on this episode, because we took the little break today, that we've been like recording the season and really laughing at a lot of these experiences. And it just makes so much sense to me to laugh at this stuff, because you're right. If you don't make it playful, if you don't laugh at some of this, it becomes too much. It's too much to like bear and really have to think about in terms of like moment by moment existence. And mm-hmm. even the fact that we could laugh about this together shows that like there is some light at the end of the tunnel, even when things feel really dark.
Mm-hmm. And it's connecting, right? That mm-hmm. gets back to community of like when you can find other people that are like, yeah, that's ridiculous the way you, like society does that. Or then it's also like, okay, I'm not alone in this. I'm not too much for feeling this way. It doesn't mean I'm too sensitive. It doesn't mean I'm too weak. There's other people who feel it similarly and who experience similar things.
Yeah, it's humanizing. Mm-hmm. And so often we have the narrative of like, I'm alone in this. Nobody else gets this. I'm the only one.
And that's when we get into push through narratives, because yeah. it's like, I must be weak. I see other people pushing through. I should be able to just push through. And I think yeah. especially those of us with like level one autism or lower traditional support needs, it is the variance in our functioning is such a mind trip that mm-hmm. it's so easy to get pulled into the like, well, no one else seems to be struggling, so I should be able to just push through. And I think that dynamic of having an invisible disability is so complex, because yeah. when we do accommodate ourselves or we do say no, we often are then left with the guilt of the like, well, could I have pushed harder? Should I have yeah. done more?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. you know, the quote that I used the other day keeps coming up into my mind with burnout. And I use the quote, sometimes in order to touch the light, you must first embrace the darkness. And for me, that has been really powerful lately. And it's one of those things that just continues to stay on my mind as I navigate my own burnout journey. So
I love the
Lord of the Rings.
Sorry.
Just in case anyone wanted to know where it's from Rings of Power in the first episode. So you should watch that show.
I love that. There's similar quotes that have kind of anchored me in life around those concepts.
Yeah.
And I do think, and this is actually perhaps a nice way to wrap up this series season, is burnout can be generative. Like if I hadn't had the burnouts I've had, I wouldn't have built what I've built. I wouldn't have the life I have now. And I think when burnout tells us your life is not working, and then when we have the capacity and the privilege to reimagine and to build something different, then burnout can be the thing that leads to something much more generative on the other side of it.
So, perfect finality to all of this. So I agree 100%, similar boat and situation. So I appreciate just holding space with you and being a part of this together. So, you know, I just want to name that as well. I just really enjoy these conversations.
I do too. I feel similarly. We've talked off air about that, of how we're really enjoying batching in the sense that we feel more connected and I think playful when we come together. And I've noticed that every time we connect afterwards, my mood is quite a bit better. And so I'm really appreciating you, Patrick.
As we both hate being perceived, we'll sit here in awkwardness.
I can be like, I'm really appreciating the podcast. Does that feel better? It's a little bit more distance.
That would be better. No, I'm just kidding. I appreciate it very much. And, you know, over the last 2.5 years, you've become one of my closest friends, and I just appreciate. Yeah.
Same, but it's less of a compliment coming from me because I don't really have friends. Whereas you actually do.
Actually, I think that's a real compliment, because if you're like, I don't really have many friends and I consider you a very close friend, that feels like very exclusive. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. It just, I'm saying once you were in, it didn't take much to be one of my closest friends because, you know, my circle's pretty small, but you're right.
Knocked down a few pegs.
But you're right in that, like, getting into friendship zone with me, not many people do. Yeah.
Anyway, we've made it weird per usual. So here we are wrapping up this 8-part series on burnout. And we hope that it has been helpful and relatable, more importantly. And we don't know what our next series will be, but next season. Sorry, Megan, Anna's team. But we do know that because we are batching in 8-week, 8-episode increments, we get to take a break now and figure that out, which is a boundary and an accommodation. So we will see y'all on the other side, and make sure to like, download, subscribe, share on all major platforms and YouTube. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Dr. Neff here. This season, we are clearly talking about autistic burnout, a topic that Neurodivergent Insights has covered extensively. So if you would like more resources to supplement your learning, we've put together a page where we've curated all of our autistic burnout resources, free and paid resources. We have lots of articles on autistic burnout. We have an upcoming free email course that's going to be released soon. We have workbooks on autistic burnout. So if you'd like to check out our resources, again, both free and paid, you can go to neurodivergentinsights.com/burnout-resources. It's linked below and in the show notes. I hope you don't need these resources, but if you do, they are there for you.